It's Wednesday, November 25th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to our special pre-Thanksgiving show here. It's going to be an extra special show with plenty of interviews and music packed in to get you through the long holiday weekend. Before we get started with it, though, I want to point out some videos that we've posted on the Daily Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. There's one with CheechandChong.com's former webmaster discussing how he was ousted from hosting that website by LiveNation.com and the new Cheech and Chong management. Very interesting, and we'll be bringing him on Normal Show Live in 2 weeks to discuss the topic. Also, speaking of Cheech and Chong, a video from Fox News where the duo appeared on the Bill O'Reilly Show arguing about legalization. And a video from across the pond, David Nutt, the sacked UK drugs advisor, getting into a heated discussion with a UK media person on the need to put science over moral posturing in government drugs policy. But right now I'd like to take the opportunity to read for you an essay that I've prepared just for this day. This Thanksgiving, I'm thankful for marijuana. While I support the end of adult marijuana prohibition for all of the big reasons, ending black market violence, helping suffering patients, controlling access for minors, reaping tax revenues, reducing police corruption, protecting civil liberties, providing justice, building an eco-friendly hemp industry, and the fact that it is just wrong to lock people up over a plant, this Thanksgiving, as I contemplate what I am thankful for, I must honestly say I support ending adult marijuana prohibition for the most selfish of reasons. I like to smoke pot. And I really dislike jail. I'm thankful for marijuana, cannabis, pot, grass, ganja, weed, kush, chronic, whatever you want to call it, for making my life possible. I'm thankful that marijuana saved me from alcoholism. I began drinking alcohol at age 16. I am the son of an alcoholic speed addict. By college, I was regularly drinking 18 packs of brew on weekdays and chugging 5 double shots of Southern Comfort or tequila on the weekends in addition to the beers. By age 21, I had gone from high school honor student, 31 ACT, advanced placement, gifted and talented kid, to flunking out of college with a 1.88 GPA. My drinking even got me a general discharge 5 months early from my 6-year National Guard commitment, where I was a popular sergeant in the Army Band and a former State Soldier of the Year. Then, July 4th, 1990, I discovered Mary Jane. It's not that my drinking ceased, but my relationship with alcohol completely changed. I found pot much more enjoyable and much less debilitating, so my alcohol use dropped off to the occasional beer with a burger, wine at a dinner, or maybe a single shot of tequila for party time. I am thankful marijuana saved me from meth addiction. As the 90s rolled on, I was playing professional music by night and working in information technology by day. The grueling schedule and the nature of the market for prohibited drugs led me to methamphetamine. All my life I was told drugs, all drugs, were bad, were deadly, and one toke would make an addict out of you. But I'd been smoking marijuana for 5 years and found nothing but good from it. My dad was a drinker, toker, and speed user, and he became an addict. But I was a drinker and a toker who was handling life just fine. Maybe I'm one of those people who don't get addicted, I thought. Next thing I know, I'm snorting rails the size of a golf tee and staying up days at a time. The only thing to stop my self-destruction was a 3 a.m. trip to the emergency room when I awoke to find my genitals shriveled, cold, and purple, along with an excruciating stabbing pain in my lower gut. The meth had eaten away at the abdominal linings, and my need to haul heavy bass amps led to an inguinal hernia, which was cutting off the flow of blood to my crotch and threatening my life. I went to the operating room immediately. During the recovery from the surgery, I was in a great deal of pain. The doctors prescribed Vicodin. You can probably guess how that turned out. First, I had a great tolerance to the pills, probably owing to size and genetics, so the doctors made sure I got the extra strength variety. Still, they didn't do much for the pain, so I took more. What I didn't do was smoke pot. No more drugs, I thought to myself, as I was popping Vicodin like Flintstones chewables. Soon, the Vicodin had their predictable side effect of stopping up my intestines, which is particularly unpleasant when you've just had surgery on your intestines. My doctors were starting to prescribe for me more pills to deal with the effects of the first pills. With little money and desire to begin another pill regimen, I gave in and went back to smoking pot. Imagine my surprise when I found the pot not only worked better than the Vicodin, but it also helped ease those nagging meth cravings I was having for weeks. I was finally relaxed enough to get a good night's sleep. I am thankful marijuana freed my wife from chronic pain. I continued smoking pot through the 90s and into the new millennium. It did place some career barriers in my way, and living in Idaho wasn't helping matters. In my home state, you can have not a speck of marijuana on you and still be arrested for merely being high. I interviewed a young woman in Idaho Falls who spent Christmas through New Year's in jail for merely being in the same apartment where there was an empty bong. On the first day of the year 2001, I got married. My wife's the fifth of 15 children from a Christian sect that believes only in faith healing. She never saw a doctor or had an immunization until she left home at age 18. She's had every scary childhood disease you can think of, mumps, whooping cough, measles, etc., and suffered a severe accident as a child that took $15,000 worth of adult plastic surgery to correct. On top of that, she is allergic to nearly every antibiotic and opioid-based medicine in existence. So as she continued to suffer from two excruciating conditions, migraines and endometriosis, her only options during an onset of pain were to ride it out crying in the fetal position in a darkened room for a couple of days, or have me drive her to the emergency room for a shot of Demerol, a drug she's not allergic to, but costs $600 an ER visit and knocks her out of 2 days of work. My wife also has brothers who fit the stereotype of pothead, and despite my motivation and success, she would not try my favorite herbal remedy for fear of turning out like them. Finally, one night, during a blinding migraine, she finally took a hit from my pipe. It was literally like a movie special effect, watching the calm and relief wash over her face and body in a matter of seconds. "Oh my God," she said, "it's working." A few weeks later, we were making our plans to move west so she could become a legal medical marijuana patient. I am thankful marijuana brought me amazing new friends. Upon moving to Oregon, I was without any friends but Cannabis Carrie, who came along as our roommate, and no family but Cousin Kenny, who had moved here a couple of years earlier. I had been deeply entrenched in the Boise music scene and had many opportunities, but in Portland, I was nobody and had only my computer software teaching job. After 2 years in town, I kept seeing examples of Portland's burgeoning cannabis community. I finally made the effort to get to the Million Marijuana March, and there, in 2005, I met Anna Diaz and Madeline Martinez of Oregon Normal. They welcomed me into their circle, and in the fight to end prohibition through volunteer work with Normal, I finally felt like I had found my calling. Now I'm part of a community of thousands, and I have dozens of friends within the movement. I am thankful marijuana helped me forge a rewarding career. All my life, I've had jobs that accentuated one part of myself while hiding others. I've never felt like any job really maximized my abilities and potential. Playing music brought out my performer, but hid my intellectual pursuits. Working in IT elicited my intellectual capabilities, but stifled my creativity. Teaching helped hone my public speaking, but lacked a topic I was truly passionate about. Being a citizen soldier gave me self-discipline and drive, but I'm way too eccentric for the military. Being a talk radio host was exciting, but I felt too out of depth to be waxing eloquently on every political topic under the sun. Working as a traveling consultant made me an efficient business traveler and helped me see the country, but being on the road so much was terribly lonely. But thanks to my wonderful new friends, I was able to get involved with Normal. I took on web design, speaking at rallies, organizing people, performing legislative and statistical analyses, and lobbying. It was all volunteer for the first 2 years, but the joy I got from helping sick and disabled people get a medical marijuana card and hearing their stories, different but not unlike mine, about how marijuana had saved their life, made it possible to push through the drudgery of the workday in anticipation of my next Normal event. Soon, I was donating audio pieces from Oregon Normal events to Chris Goldstein at the Normal Daily Audio Stash podcast. I had also won a national contest and was hosting my own professional political talk radio show. When Chris had to depart the podcast, he tapped me to take it over. I did that as a contractor for a year until a position opened up at Normal, and the rest is history. I have a job I love that uses my IT skills, creativity, analysis, self-discipline, radio voice, teaching ability, public speaking, business travel experience, and history of marijuana and drug use. I am thankful marijuana has put me in a position to help end cannabis prohibition laws for the betterment of America. I feel so truly blessed to be doing what I'm doing now. I get emails from readers and listeners, and occasionally I get the opportunity to meet them in person, and when they tell me that I'm the reason they got active in marijuana law reform, or how something I said helped them see through some reefer madness, I'm filled with a sense of pride that I was able to contribute, and a little bit of embarrassment that anyone would take a college dropout ex-tweaker drunk like me so seriously. Every time we open a new Normal chapter, I'm excited for the next man or woman like myself who will be hooking up with those local activists and beginning their long, strange trip with Mary Warner. I always hope they find as much to be thankful for with marijuana and Normal as I have. For my career, health, friendships, enlightenment, enjoyment, passion, and purpose, this Thanksgiving, I am thankful for marijuana. Now, coming up on your extended Normal Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your cannabis community calendar and a couple of shout-outs. Then it's on to your hemp headlines, where we'll provide 4 news stories instead of 3. Today, we're looking at the LA City Council not banning the sales of marijuana in dispensaries. The Denver Post is terribly surprised that tens of thousands of people, given the opportunity, want to be legal marijuana consumers. In Oklahoma, the Will Foster saga may be over, as Will Foster has been released on parole. And the most conservative legislator in New Jersey comes out in favor of medical marijuana. Then we bring you some special Daily Toker tunes for the rest of the week. We're going to start with your Irie Wednesday tune from Ika Mouse to give you a little bit of reggae music. Then we're going to play our cannabis science interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We discuss the effect of cannabis on memory and cognition. We'll bring you your Groovin' Thursday tune with a little bit of Cooley High for your rap pleasure. And in a second cannabis science interview, we talk with Dr. Sunil Agarwal from the medical student section of the American Medical Association on their reversal of their opposition to moving marijuana out of Schedule 1. Finally, we wrap up the podcast with your Rockin' Friday tune, a great tune from Australia and a band called Carnivool. All that and more coming up on your special Thanksgiving Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Roll me something fat and long. Pack me a bowl or fill me a bong. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. On Thursday, November 26th, it is Thanksgiving Day, and Kansas City Normal will be with The Schwag, a Grateful Dead tribute band. For more information, check out kcnormal.org or dial 888-KC-NORMAL, extension 420. On Saturday, November 28th, Oregon Normal is holding their twice-monthly cardholders meeting at the Village Ballroom, 700 Northeast Deakum in Portland, Oregon. It is open only to members of Oregon Normal who are cardholders in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. For more information, check out ornorml.org. Also on Saturday, Normal Nebraska is having an open meeting in Omaha at McFoster's Natural Kind Cafe. For more information, check out normalnebraska.org. And Normal of Waco, Inc. will be participating in a Waco Disc Golf Association Nighttime Disc Golf Tournament. Check out Normal of Waco, Inc.'s website for more details. And finishing up on Saturday night, Normal Show Live is on the air with special guest actor Hal B. Klein from Independent Films and director-filmmaker Dow Puspoli from the new film Fix, a look at American drug addiction. We'll also be taking your calls live at 347-994-1810. For more information, check out live.normal.org. Next week, Tuesday, December 1st, Joplin, Missouri will be having their monthly meeting at the Blackthorn Pub and Pizza. And Wednesday, December 2nd, Philly Normal would like you to know about special hearings on House Bill 1393 at the Health and Human Services Committee. This is the medical marijuana bill, and for more information, check out pa4mmj.org. That's PA, the number 4, mmj.org. For more information on all of these events, including contact names, emails, phone numbers, website addresses, and more, check out the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
It's a Normal shout-out.
My shout-out today goes out to just one person, Oprah Winfrey. For the last couple of weeks, one of our stashers in the Fresh Stash, up on our blog at stash.normal.org, has been rallying people to contact Oprah Winfrey to discuss medical marijuana on her talk show. I'll take it farther than that, Oprah. We'd like you to discuss marijuana in any regard on your show. When I think about all the Oprah episodes that I've seen, a few, I can't seem to recall any that had anything to do with marijuana medically or with regulation and legalization. So Oprah, before you end your talk show in 2011, please do a story on marijuana. We'll be glad to supply any experts you might need, and I'm always willing to fly to Chicago. For more information, check out Harpo Productions on the internet to find the contact information for the Oprah Winfrey Show.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a.k.a. NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our NORML daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. LA City Council does not explicitly ban medical marijuana sales. From the Los Angeles Times. Dispensaries in Los Angeles could continue to accept cash for medical marijuana under a provision approved by the City Council on Tuesday after it adopted language carefully crafted to maneuver past the city attorney's adamant position that state law bars the sale of the drug. The council, which avoided the word sales on the advice of its lawyers, decided that Los Angeles would allow, quote, cash contributions, reimbursements, and compensations, end quote, as long as they comply with state law. City Attorney Carmen Trutanich and Los Angeles County District Attorney Steve Cooley had urged the council to explicitly ban the sale of marijuana. Council members expressed a clear interest in caps, most likely distributed among the city's 21 police divisions. The council, though, remains unsure whether to give preference to the 186 dispensaries that registered with the city when the moratorium was adopted in 2007. Councilman Richard Alarcon said he saw nothing magic in the number, while Councilwoman Janice Hahn said it would be, quote, fair and reasonable, end quote, to favor those who had followed the law. The council also approved an amendment to limit operators to one dispensary and an amendment to limit patients and caregivers to membership in one collective, but allow for emergency purposes. The restriction on membership drew protests from medical marijuana advocates. Quote, if you go to your favorite dispensary and they're out of what you need, you have to go someplace else, end quote, said DeJay Couty, the head of a patient group. The council readily adopted a series of amendments, most of them borrowed from West Hollywood, that added more protections for neighborhoods. Dispensaries would be required to have unarmed security guards who would patrol a two-block area, to provide a contact name to police and residents who live within 500 feet, and to deposit cash once a day. The council also tangled over an amendment to put a $100,000 cap on salaries at dispensaries. It was offered by Alarcon, who said the dispensary downstairs from his office was making $12,000 a day. The council decided to try to find another way to limit salaries, such as applying standards set by the United Way. Oh, what crazy hoops one must jump through to regulate legal sales of marijuana to just 5% of its customers while maintaining criminal sanctions for the other 95%. Every single problem the council addresses is a result of marijuana prohibition. Why so many dispensaries so quickly? Because people like marijuana, and prohibition makes it hard to get unless you can buy it at a dispensary. Why limit patients and caregivers to one collective? Because people like marijuana and prefer to shop around for the best experience. Why require unarmed security guards? Because prohibited marijuana is so expensive and most people can't get it, which leads to theft and robbery. Why provide contacts to residents? Because prohibited marijuana means no place for people to go smoke it and a chance at making a buck reselling it. Why put caps on salaries? Because prohibited marijuana is worth so much that selling it can make you rich. Patients and caregivers will always be subject to this sort of overregulation so long as the majority of the market is prohibited. Can you imagine someone requiring you to shop at only one pharmacy? Have you ever heard of a liquor store required to give contact names to all residents within 500 feet? Do you know of any neighborhood taverns that clear $12,000 a day? Let's just regulate cannabis for all adults, and we'll see the prices drop, along with the concomitant crime, and patients and caregivers will have the greatest access to medicine possible. Denver Post's alarmist worries about a marijuana minefield. From the Denver Post. As we've said before, lawmakers need to shape regulations that hew closely to the intent of Amendment 20, which voters passed in 2000. We do not believe the escalation in the number of certified medical marijuana users, now more than 14,000, and the proliferation of dispensaries is what voters had in mind when they supported the measure. The measure was aimed at people who suffered from severe pain, people who were perhaps undergoing chemotherapy and needed relief from nausea. We don't have that. What we have appears to be a system in which a whole lot of people are making claims of pain and muscle spasms, paying a nominal fee, and getting a medical marijuana card. It is not anywhere near what voters approved, and legislators need to get a grip on the situation. Medical marijuana was an act of compassion by Colorado voters who were offering an avenue of relief to the sickest people among us. The system that comes out of regulatory efforts, be they by lawmakers or administrative action, must honor that intent. Ah, once again, the mythical claim of abuse of the medical marijuana system, as if somehow 14,000 people who suffer from pain and other ailments is too many. How many medical marijuana patients is the right number in a state of nearly 5 million? By my reckoning, that's less than 0.3% of the state's population. Just how many medical marijuana patients should there be? Well, according to Colorado's Central Cancer Registry, there were over 18,000 diagnoses of cancer alone in 2005. There are likely hundreds of thousands of potential patients if you consider all the qualifying conditions under Amendment 20. Or could some of those 14,000 actually be healthy people who just paid $90 to the state and more to a doctor or two for the privilege of being left alone to smoke a joint? Well, let's see. 14,000 patients times $90 is $1.26 million annually that Colorado brings in. Plus, the sales and excise taxes the Attorney General just said were perfectly legal for Colorado to enact, which might bring in another $15 million for the state and $45 million for the cities. Sounds more like a marijuana money field to me. But even then, surveys show that nearly 13% of Coloradoans will use marijuana this year. That would be 650,000 pot smokers, but probably less since the 13% figure is people 12 and older, and some of the 5 million Coloradoans have to be between 0 and 11, so I think we can safely say at least 500,000. 14,000 patients, then, would be 2.8% of all Colorado tokers abusing the system. Finally, I'm always amused when people use their time-traveling telepathy to tell us what voters were thinking when they voted in medical marijuana. The actual words the voters read on the ballot in 2000 were, "Shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution authorizing the medical use of marijuana for persons suffering from debilitating medical conditions and, in connection therewith, establishing an affirmative defense to Colorado criminal laws for patients and their primary caregivers relating to the medical use of marijuana, defining debilitating medical condition and authorizing the state health agency to approve other medical conditions or treatments as debilitating medical conditions." And, of course, in the actual text of the constitutional amendment, debilitating medical condition means cancer, glaucoma, positive status for human immunodeficiency virus or acquired immune deficiency syndrome or treatment for such conditions, or a chronic or debilitating disease or medical condition or treatment for such conditions which produces, for a specific patient, one or more of the following, and for which, in the professional opinion of the patient's physician, such condition or conditions reasonably may be alleviated by the medical use of marijuana. Cachexia, severe pain, severe nausea, seizures, including those that are characteristic of epilepsy, or persistent muscle spasms, including those that are characteristic of multiple sclerosis. Now, the Denver Post may quibble with debilitating and severe when it sees a young person with a medical marijuana card. My dictionary says debilitating is to make weak or feeble and causing a loss of energy and strength. Severe means intensely bad or unpleasant. Does a young lady's carpal tunnel syndrome pain from secretarial work count as bad or unpleasant enough? Does a young man's chronic migraines from college football collisions count as causing a lack of energy and strength? This notion that young people can't suffer from injuries and maladies serious enough to deserve medical pot is ridiculous. So what were the voters thinking when they approved Amendment 29 years ago? I'm sure there were some who thought it was just for bedridden cancer and AIDS patients. But given that 13% of the population smokes recreationally, and 40% of voters statewide later approved a full tax and regulate model, I believe a majority of the voters who supported the measure supported it as a step toward legalization. Medical marijuana proponents should always remember that no state initiative has passed without the strong support of people who favor even broader adult access to cannabis, and that number is growing every year. If there is a huge rush in acquiring a medical marijuana card, that is the sign of a successful program. It's not surprising that people who have been self-medicating with cannabis for years, successfully managing their symptoms, would suddenly rush to become legal in the eyes of the law when there is a working system to do so and access to marijuana without buying from a street dealer. Oklahoma's Will Foster is free on parole again. From marijuanaupdate.info. Medical marijuana patient Will Foster is a free man. According to a phone call I just received from his partner, Susan Mueller, Foster was released on parole and walked out of prison in Oklahoma today. As you who have followed the Will Foster saga know, he became a poster boy for drug war injustice when he was sentenced to a mind-blowing 93 years in prison in Oklahoma back in the 1990s for growing a closet full of medical marijuana. Thanks in part to the efforts of StopTheDrugWar.org, Foster eventually got his sentence cut to a mere 20 years for growing plants and was eventually paroled to the care of guru of ganja Ed Rosenthal in California, who had taken up his case. Last year, Foster was raided and charged with an illegal marijuana grow in California, although his grow was perfectly legal under the state's medical marijuana law. He spent a year in jail in Sonoma County before prosecutors dropped all charges, but by then, Oklahoma parole authorities demanded he return to the state to finish his sentence. Foster dropped his fight against extradition and returned in September. A good sign occurred a few weeks ago when the parole board decided he had not violated his parole and should be released. This week, Oklahoma Governor Brad Henry must have agreed he had the final say in the matter. Right now, Foster is making his way to parole offices in Oklahoma City to sign the paperwork. He should be back with his loved ones in California in a matter of days. Thanks to everyone who agitated for his release. Every once in a while, we win one. Happy Thanksgiving, Will Foster. When Oklahoma starts making sensible decisions about medical marijuana patients, you know we're winning. New Jersey lawmakers' personal experiences lead to support of medical marijuana. From the Mount Olive Chronicle. Assemblyman Michael Patrick Carroll, Republican of Morris, remembers when a family member was suffering from debilitating nausea and extreme pain for months after her surgery for ovarian cancer. Carroll knew that something as simple as marijuana could significantly limit his relative's discomfort. He also knew it was illegal to use marijuana for any reason, including medical reasons. The assemblyman said the experience 3 years ago reinforced his belief that it is wrong to bar people like his relative from smoking marijuana if it could ease their suffering. It wasn't long thereafter that Carroll joined in co-sponsoring an assembly bill to legalize use of marijuana for medical reasons. The bill is sponsored by Assemblyman Reed Guscura, Democrat of Mercer, and Carroll is the only Republican among a number of co-sponsors. The legislators said another personal situation further spurred him to support the legalization of pot for medical reasons. He said his grandmother had been diagnosed with lung cancer and that doctors had given her 6 months to live. Quote, 6 years later, she was still trucking on, but she suffered from horrible pain, end quote, Carroll said. The doctors prescribed a derivative of heroin and cocaine to help ease the pain. It was an irony that did not get past Carol. Quote, "But marijuana is considered a problem?" End quote, he said. Carol said he had his own painful medical ailments, which further illustrated why a prohibition on the use of medical marijuana makes no sense. Funny how personal experiences with cancer can make even the most die-hard Law and Order family values conservative Republican into a medical marijuana supporter. There's a scene in the movie Totally Baked where the medical marijuana activist sneaks some syrup of ipecac into the medical marijuana opponent's drink. In case you don't know, syrup of ipecac induces intense nausea and vomiting and is sometimes given to people who have been poisoned. As the opponent is on his knees, violently heaving and begging for relief, they drop down to him a number of pharmaceutical anti-emetics, telling him all he needs to do to end his nausea is just swallow and keep down one of those pills. Unable to do so, and desperate for relief, he finally acquiesces to taking a bong hit, and his nausea is relieved almost instantly. It's a comedy, and in no way do I ever support drugging a person without their knowledge. But man, oh man, do I ever run the syrup of ipecac fantasy in my brain whenever I encounter an ignorant reefer-mad politician. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Missing no words about his love for marijuana, underground Jamaican music legend Ika Miles declares it loud and proud in his song, I Love Weed, from his latest CD, Ika Speak. It's hard to pin Ika down to a one musical category with his musical gumbo mix of reggae, jazz, pop, and funk. More than a quarter century of recording, global touring, and enough years of residency in the suburbs of Irvine to justify an accent heavy on California Margaritaisms have hardly changed the dance hall godfather's Huffy Kingston patois. Though his voice is smooth and rich in tone, Mouse's unique reimagining of English grammatical rules can prove challenging for the unprepared ear. With an impressive string of pro-cannabis songs such as Sensi Party and Ganja Smuggling, Ika Mouse has been a longtime soldier in the war to free the weed. You can check Ika Mouse out at www.ekexperience.com. That's EEKSPERIENCE.com. And at myspace.com, Ika Mouse space. Now spark up a big fat doobie and proclaim your love for God's natural herb with the normal daily audio stash every Wednesday Toker Tune of the Day, I Love Weed by Ika Miles.
You love weed, huh? I love weed too. Yes, we are love weed.
I love the weed. Yes, we are in California. The place you plant the indica. Proposition 215. It's a medical need. Weed, weed, I love weed. Weed, weed, I love weed. Weed, weed, I love weed. I love the weed. Because smoke the weed, you shouldn't smoke the seed. Then if you smoke the seed, you're gonna kill the breed. A friend with weed is a friend indeed. I love the weed. Weed, weed, I love weed. Do you love weed? I love weed. Weed, weed, I love weed. I love the weed. Smoke the skunk, you can smoke the blunt. I've been smoking the weed for a million months. And though the weed never gets you drunk, I love the weed. Weed, weed, I love weed. Weed, you love the weed too? Weed, weed, I love weed. I love the weed. Because you know that the weed is a medical need. And it's a proposition 215. Every man got a need, every man got a man, I love the weed, weed, weed. I love weed. Weed, 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 weed. Friend with weed is a friend indeed. I love the weed. You know, smoke the blunt and I smoke the skunk. And you know, I'm smoking the weed for a million months. You know, the weed, it never gets you drunk. I love the weed. I say, weed, weed, I love weed. Weed, I love the weed. I love weed, I love the weed. Smoke it with my dinner, smoke it with my lunch. You know I got to get some weed if I land it for my brunch. Everybody got a need, everybody got a breed. I love the weed. I love the weed. I love the weed. The skunk in the wash with the blunt. I've been smoking weed for a million months. Do the weed never get you drunk? I love the love the weed. I never smoke the seed. Because if I smoke the seed, I'm gonna kill the breed. Plant the seed and build a tree. I love the weed, 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 weed. We love weed, weed. Everybody love weed, 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 love weed. I love the weed. Down in California, medical need. Proposition 215. Every man got a need, every man got a I love the weed. I say, smoke the skunk, you may smoke the blunt. A friend with weed is a friend indeed.
Everybody got a need and everybody got a greed. I love the weed.
Listen to my Rasta songs. You know I love to smoke my bong. Smoke my blunt for a million months. I love the weed, weed, we love weed. I love weed, 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 love weed. I love the weed. You know I gotta take it. Give me my spliff.
Weed. Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. We're back with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our cannabis science segment. Welcome back to the show, Doctor.
Oh, great to be back.
You know, we had a subject we were going to talk about, but gosh, I just can't remember what it was. Oh, yes. We wanted to talk about cannabis and memory deficits, if I may open with a joke. This is a topic that comes up quite a bit where, when the prohibitionists come out against, medical marijuana or just marijuana regulation in general, they talk about how it affects the mind, how people who smoke pot long term can't remember anything, or it hastens, the loss of memory. I just thought this would be fun to talk about, to try to get to clear the air and to find out what the science really does say about cannabis and cognition, or cannabis and memory in particular.
Sure thing, Russ. This is a complicated topic and one that's got a long history, as you can imagine. It looks like the acute effects of cannabis, so literally right after it's used, those really do include some memory deficits. So folks who've recently smoked tend to do less well on memory tests than folks who haven't recently. And in truth, the impact isn't huge or incredibly severe, but it's definitely there. Mm-hmm. The more controversial side has been the work on chronic users who aren't currently using. So they say, you know, if you used every day for 2 years and then came into the lab before you used that day, would you be okay with your memory? And this has generated at least a dozen studies, but some are better than others over the years. And some were saying yes and some were saying no. And taking a close look at it, you realize that some of them just didn't control very well for whether or not people had used recently. And then others didn't really find very many effects. Whenever we've got a big literature and the outcomes are some yes and some no, one way to try to get at this is to do a meta-analysis. And Igor Grant, who's a big neuropsychologist down in San Diego, published one in 2003, basically saying, in truth, there is not a lot going on when you've got folks who are clearly not high at the time doing a number of different learning and memory tests, except for some pretty small effects in short-term memory, like learning new material, that kind of thing. And the effects are generally, you know, you got to learn a list of 15 words. You might know one less than the folks who've never used cannabis or haven't used it for years and years. What's funny about this is there are a number of different things that might contribute that don't really have anything to do with cannabis. One of my students, Allison Luby, has shown that there's a stereotype threat that might be involved in this. So that's a phenomenon where folks who are a member of an out-group who think that their performance is supposed to be impaired sometimes behave in ways that are consistent with the stereotype. So that was something that got started by Claude Steele, where basically folks of African and Caribbean descent came in, took this exam, and they said, oh, you people never do too well on these. And then sure enough, they didn't. But if they said, oh, hey, this is just a fun game, then they did fine.
Hmm.
What Allison found was, at least among the men, if she had them read a paragraph that said, oh, and cannabis users can't do these tasks, the men sure enough didn't do as well than if they had read a paragraph that said, oh, and cannabis doesn't bother these at all. So I thought that was intriguing. What's funny is that the women, it went the other direction. If you tell a cannabis smoking woman she's not going to do well on a test, she's like, oh yeah, bring it on. And they ended up doing better, which I thought was pretty curious.
Hmm.
And then my new student, Raina, has basically just finished analyzing some data on neuropsych tests with cannabis users and non-users. And basically what she has done is she does see a small deficit in cannabis users unless she says, oh, by the way, this study is for helping the marijuana policy legalization movement. And then suddenly everybody like gets right on it and really does a great job on all their verbal learning. So it seems like it may be more a question of getting folks really invested in the test themselves than anything else.
Yeah, you had mentioned a little bit there about when someone is under the influence, had difficulties with picking up new memories or new learning. This is something I think about when I think about the people who have told me they've gone through medical school or they've gone through getting a law degree, and during the whole time they were in school, they were active marijuana smokers. Is there a problem with smoking pot and picking up new learning?
Well, so if you're literally using and then studying right afterwards, it's definitely going to be inefficient. It's not going to be your best way to get things into long-term memory. But if you study all day long, work hard, and then decide, you know, you're going to kick back for a little while before you hit the hay, no, that's not going to be a problem at all. And we've got some pretty compelling data on that. And it's not like even if you used every day for 2 years, you're going to suddenly lose all this previously gained memories that you had either. So I feel like although during intoxication you can't absorb new material very rapidly, if you're not intoxicated, even if you're a regular user, that's not going to be an issue.
Mm, okay. You know, we like to stick to the verified science on these things, but every now and then I like to bring up an anecdote. Just as, you know, you had mentioned these long-term studies and meta-analyses, and maybe this is a dumb question, but as far as doing these long-term studies, I've noticed in my own life, and I've been a regular cannabis user since 1990. I'm now just about to turn 42 years old. I do find situations where I'm struggling to find a word or I've forgotten something really simple. And I wonder, how do you tease out that being a result of daily cannabis use versus just the fact that I'm getting old?
Well, it's intriguing because studies of everyday memory, I think, are much more practical than studies of, here, learn this list of words that doesn't matter to you at all. And the age-related changes on that show a whole lot of variance. And there is at least one study saying cannabis users report these more often, but some of it has to do with our own bias in remembering things. If you're part of this movement and you forget something, everybody around you immediately says, oh, the pot guy. whereas friends of mine who have used maybe 10 times in their whole lives forget things, and nobody does that to them. And then because no one's pointing it out, I think they're less likely to remember it. When we look at lab work about other tasks like that, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Some of the first studies along that showed absolutely no effects at all, but then I looked at the memory tests and they were just way too easy. It's all, part of the aging process as well. So I feel like if we each learn some memory tricks, we often do a whole lot better. So I'm a guy who tends to lose his keys, and I've basically developed this trick now where either I put them on this hook all the time, or if I'm going to put them down somewhere, I have to create this outrageous image of it. So if I'm going to put them on the windowsill, I imagine my keys giant breaking through the window, right? And then later on when I say, where's my key? Oh, it's breaking through the window. And then sure enough, there it is on the windowsill. Whereas if I don't form that intense image, sometimes I'm more likely to lose it.
It's funny. I think about the cannabinoid receptors that they've found, and in my readings of this, I found that they've discovered them in the locations in the brain that have a lot to do with memory. And one intriguing development that's come out is how researchers are looking into these cannabinoid therapies for the treatment of things like post-traumatic stress. And that brings us back to, you know, what you mentioned about how we remember things and how I may be more prone to remember the time I forget my keys because I'm in the movement. It reminds me when I first bought a Jeep. It suddenly seemed like everybody was driving Jeeps. It's probably not. I'm just noticing it because I'm driving one now. So I'm wondering about these ideas about treating post-traumatic stress and other disorders of memory in the mind like that, and how cannabis's effect on memory, if it's not affecting us long-term as casual users, then how does it affect the people who would use it medically in the situations where they need to forget some things?
This is an intriguing literature, and it seems that, as you mentioned, the hippocampus, the part of the brain that's really key for memory, talks to the amygdala, which is a neighboring part of the brain that's all about emotion. And that communication between those two is what seems to have gone sort of awry in PTSD because they've had this outrageously intense emotional experience. And in some ways, it's been so outrageous that the connection with the hippocampus has kind of gone askew. It looks like, and it's still speculative, that the impact of cannabis on the hippocampus can sometimes make the communication with the amygdala less outrageous, so you don't have these oddball, nightmarish re-experiencing moments where suddenly you're around a cue that's a vague reminder of the trauma itself, and instead of going all the way off, you just say, oh, I recognize this is kind of anxiety-provoking, and now I can handle it. It also suggests, though, that the exposure treatments for PTSD seem to work in a comparable way, and as much as I, you know, appreciate folks who use cannabis for PTSD, the exposure treatments still seem to do a whole lot better in that you literally take 12 weeks of writing about it, talking about it, sitting down with a therapist and relaxing and going through that trauma time and time and again. And sure enough, just like Pavlov's dog hearing the bell and not getting the food anymore, the response tends to dissipate. I had a not horrible but upsetting accident when I was still living in Los Angeles. And whenever I drove by that same spot, I really got worked up, started tearing up, felt really, really anxious. And the only thing I could do was relax and go drive by that point again and again and again and again and again until some of that stuff died down. Now, obviously, I can't send, I can't send Beth back to Hanoi, but by, setting up a safe environment, developing a decent relationship with a therapist, and walking through the details of these events time and again, it's not a walk in the park, but literally 3 months of hard work and symptoms really improve markedly.
Now, that relationship that you were mentioning between the hippocampus and the amygdala and how that emotional response to memories and such, does that have any bearing on what we consider the laid-back nature of cannabis consumers, that perhaps our reactions to stress aren't as fight or flight?
It's curious, because the stress response dampening effects of cannabis in particular aren't as well investigated in the laboratory as, say, alcohol's. But it does seem to have that physiological component as well as a cognitive one. Generally, when folks view an event, they aren't upset about the event per se so much as what they say to themselves about it. And folks who are regular users can report that even when they're in the midst of something stressful like a move, right? I've got to move all my stuff over to this new house, and it seems like an incredible drag. And then at the end of the day, they'll use and look at the situation and in some ways have a different perspective and say, you know, this isn't my favorite thing to do in the world, but I can handle this. And then the next day they get up and get right to it. Whereas if they hadn't done that, some of the cognitions they have are, oh my God, this is impossible. Oh, I hate this. This is a catastrophe. And it's funny how sometimes using cannabis can help folks catch those oddball, irrational, catastrophizing thoughts and turn them into a little reminder that, hey, this is really all going to turn out okay.
We certainly hope so. Everything's going to turn out just fine for all of us here this holiday season. And thank you for bringing us this information on memory and cannabis. I know it's one of the big areas that always gets talked about, and it's one of the big stereotypes about cannabis consumers. I've often thought one way we could do this is, you know, we need in this sport, we need our Jeopardy champion. We need somebody who's the Michael Phelps of memory to come out as a cannabis consumer would be very helpful to our movement. Thanks so much, Dr. Earlywine, for joining us here on our cannabis science segment, and I hope everything goes well for you and your family this holiday.
Oh, hey, you have a great one too.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana, whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Puff Pass Records.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show, accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. The West Coast rapper formerly known as Cooley, or Cool Wada, is primed and ready for his solo debut on Asphalt Entertainment, the label he recently formed with close friend and business associate Keith K-Mac Bowles. Cooley High is the culmination of many months on the mic, spitting verse after verse on track after track. Born Stacy Wagner and raised by a single mom in the Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles, Cooley was a hip-hop baby who came to the life through breakdancing. Cooley and his friends started freestyling because there really wasn't anything else to do once the breakdancing era played out. Cooley has been making a name for himself in the rap game for more than a decade. In 1995, he joined a crew called the Tone Deaf Click, where he met fellow rapper Chico. The two would eventually partner up to become Chico and Cool Wada and release two full-length albums, Wild in the West and Parallel. Both projects garnered modest success, critical acclaim, and put them in the company of numerous platinum-selling producers, including Chris the Glove Taylor of Dr. Dre and Mahogany of Jay-Z. For more on Cooley High, check out www.myspace.com/CooleyHigh420, and registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Cooley High with If I Had a Blunt.
Techies, we lie.
How you going to enjoy good music without good marijuana, huh, brother?
Say what?
How you going to enjoy good music without good marijuana?
If I had a blunt, I'd spark it. everybody's mad. This is the year of everybody wanting to be a motherfucking gangster. What's that shit about? What's up, nigga? Blow your motherfucking mind out. Pow, 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 bam.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
A couple of weeks ago, we brought you the story of the American Medical Association reversing their stand on marijuana as a Schedule I substance. And here to discuss that with us is Dr. Sunil Agarwal, who's a final year medical student at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Also, we interviewed him here on the stash a while ago when he was working with the medical student section to make these recommendations. So, Sunil, welcome back to the show, first of all.
Thanks. Great to be here, Russ.
So since the last time you were here, you know, we had discussed how the medical students in the AMA, the younger doctors coming up through the system, had a much different take on the medical use of cannabinoids. I was wondering if you could fill us in on what happened with the medical school students and how that led to the American Medical Association making this stunning reversal.
Sure. Last year in June, I had presented a resolution along with some co-authors to the medical student section's General Assembly, which would call on our group to recognize that marijuana is misclassified in the federal law as Schedule I substance and that should be moved to a more appropriate schedule. That effort succeeded, and the assembly was then tasked to submit that on to the larger AMA body. And they were going to wait a little while to forward that, so that didn't get forwarded until November of last year. So in the meantime, between June of 08 and November of 08, I started to build support amongst other sections within the American Medical Association in anticipation of this resolution being before them. So in the meantime, I went to the Washington State Medical Association, which is my state, the section of the AMA that is in my state of Washington here. And I was lobbied along with my county medical society here in Seattle. I live in King County, which is a very progressive medical society. And both of us sort of ganged up on the Washington State Medical Association and said, hey, you should also take this resolution to the AMA to call for the reclassification of marijuana status as a Schedule I, because we have medical use of marijuana in this state. It doesn't make sense that it's medically useful in one state and then you move to another state and it's not. That doesn't make any sense. So they all agreed to that. And they also said that we should protect doctors and patients who are participating in state medical marijuana programs. So then those two resolutions showed up to that resolution plus the student resolution showed up at the AMA last November, and we had a good debate about it there, and a lot of experts came to talk about it, and the AMA decided that they would study the issue for a year and write a report about it, so that and then based on their own internal report, they would make recommendations to what the new AMA policy should be. So between November 2008 and November 2009, this body in the AMA, where they're very distinguished counsel on science and public health, which has about 20 members and multiple staff members. They collected information, and I was in communication with one of the director of the council who was writing this report, and basically fed them information, clinical trials, reviews, studies, all whatever information was out there that can make the case that yes, cannabis has been shown in randomized controlled trials, what we call gold standard trials, to actually reduce pain, improve appetite, reduce spasticity in MS patients. All those things were were forwarded onto them, and finally they even brought me on board as an expert reviewer of that report. So before it was released, got a chance to take a look at it and make some additions and corrections and suggestions. And finally, at the report, based on all the evidence and based on these resolutions that were before them. And in the meantime, there was another resolution that got rolled into it that was submitted by the New York State delegation. They brought a resolution in June of this year saying, hey, we are considering a medical marijuana law in our state. We want to make sure that we won't get in trouble with the feds. We authorize marijuana because we remember back in the Clinton days that, there was an executive order that gave us some trouble and, if we could take our licenses away or something, and we don't want that to happen. So, AMA, can you help us? So that resolution got rolled in too. So all these three resolutions from Washington State, from the medical student section, and from New York all got rolled into this report, and they recommended at the end of it that, yes, cannabinoid medicine, cannabinoid botanical drug substances, which is a fancy way of saying marijuana, these things are coming in medicine, and they have a lot of potentials because they work on the system. And yes, it looks like in order to get this development going, in order to improve access to research, we need to urge the federal government to review its classification in Schedule 1. And that was the recommendation for the report. And after a bunch of debate in November of this year in Houston at their interim meeting, they had a voice vote on the floor and it overwhelmingly passed. Mm. And now we have the new AMA policy.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story. And you mentioned how Washington State Medical Association, the division there, got involved in supporting this because they have medical marijuana in Washington State. Did any of the other 12 medical marijuana states do anything similar?
Well, not at the outset, but in November of last year, one group of states within the AMA openly, voiced their support. They were called the Pacific Rim Caucus. And that included California, Hawaii, some I think Guam, and I'm not sure if Oregon was part of that. I don't think they were.
Okay.
Alaska certainly was. So it was a group of states, three of them, which did have medical cannabis laws, their whole sort of team got on board. But I think at the outset initially, I think there was a lot of sort of watching and waiting on a lot of bodies in the AMA wanting to see kind of where this would go before they express their support. So, the medical students, I think, we'd like to see ourselves as sort of the conscience of the AMA or voice of idealism and, help them sort of see issues when they get mired. And we gave them cover, and then the State Medical Association helped also give more cover. And so, but it didn't really, I think the WSMA was the first to stick their neck out like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we won, so.
Yeah, that's great. And as this battle, this little political battle raged on, were there any groups inside the AMA that were providing opposition to these changes?
Oh, yes. The Society of Addiction Medicine.
No.
Some of their folks would make claims in the hearings and testimonies that were pretty unsubstantiated, that would get people to think, we're going to teach our children terrible things if we endorse marijuana as having some medical utilities, and as if it's good policy to be able to lie to children about the actual effects of drugs. And they tried to sort of introduce amendments to kill it on the floor, but they just didn't have the support that the majority did. But yes, I think the Psychiatric Association they were interested in it, but it didn't seem like that they had actively endorsed, supported it, or opposed it. The American College of Physicians, which last year adopted similarly worded resolution, they were strongly supportive of this effort within the AMA. They're also members of the AMA, so they helped.
Okay. You'd mentioned when this came to the voice vote in early November in Houston that it passed overwhelmingly. Are we seeing now support amongst the rank and file doctors increase? I mean, would you say a majority of practicing physicians now know better about cannabis, or is there still some room to go there?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's only 13 states, maybe about 7,000 physicians or so that have participated in these state-level medical cannabis programs. So they just don't, I don't think enough doctors have their hands, have the experience of real clinical management of patients with cannabis, not that they're even being educated about it. You know, so it would have to be a special kind of doctor who's both independently educated himself or herself about science and medicine around cannabis and cannabinoid. And then, secondly, is in a place where they're able to incorporate that into medical practice. So I think the doctors that are in the states that where it's going on need to do a better job to get the information out to their colleagues in the other states. But I think there is a growing education, yes, that there is something called, you know, cannabinoid receptor, and mm-hmm. yes, there is that cannabis, which is what marijuana actually is called, is has chemicals in it that can, you know, therapeutically target those things in the body. So people are coming to understand that. I mean, it's not a doctors are notoriously need to be educated and re-educated with what's called continuing medical education. So I think there's a number of them that don't know any of this yet. So, but I think they get it that there are people out there who do know it, and you know the people who are studying it should be given some support. So
yeah, now looking at this, looking at these folks and getting these doctors this education that you mentioned, does the AMA have any input into the medical schools as far as what their curriculum might be and that they might include more truthful information on cannabinoid therapies?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Russ, the AMA is certainly involved in certifying continuing medical education credits. And there's a different association that's involved in medical college curriculum. They are part of the AMA, but that association of medical colleges, but they're their own entity. So, you know, that fight would sort of have to go someplace else. But the AMA is trying to get it there. At least they had said that they intend on publishing their report on their year-long study report, which is about 10 or 11, 12 pages, in a reputable peer-reviewed medical journal. So hopefully that'll reach more physicians.
Okay.
And you know, as information comes in, hopefully they'll get more comfortable with moving forward on this.
Well, we hope so too. And you know, looking at it from a political standpoint, of course, when Congress outlawed marijuana in 1937, they completely ignored the AMA's recommendations. What do you see as the political fallout from this recommendation? Continued governmental ignorance, or should this actually have some effect on the federal level?
Oh, good. Well, actually, let's go back to 1937 for one second. Not only did the Congress ignore the AMA's position at the time, which was calling for not to have this federal ban in place because it was, you know, marijuana already had, or cannabis, as they like to call it, already had recognized uses and would have many future more ones, and that would be all stifled. The Congress also falsified the AMA's position on the floor of the Congress. So it was ignored and falsified. So I think this time they're not going to be able to falsify it.
No,
maybe ignore it, but they won't falsify.
Yeah, there was no Google in 1937.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, they were able. One congressman was able to get up and say, "Yeah, the AMA actually is very supportive of this Marijuana Tax Act bill," when the congressman lied. So now, you know, the Drug Enforcement Administration was forced to take off their website the AMA opposition to, or the AMA's support of maintaining Schedule 1 for marijuana. So now in this day and age, they're going to have to sort of squarely face the AMA's position.
Yeah.
And as far as change, and I mean, they're not being silent about this. They've now published an article in their own AMA newspaper about the shift in their policy, and that's big news. And apparently, the writers of that article tried to contact the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, to find out, well, you know, what are you guys going to do now and with your scheduling in light of our new position? And since, you know, the DEA sort of seems to think that they think they know what's currently accepted medical practice, but the DEA didn't return their calls.
Surprise.
And they've been sort of quiet, sitting on they haven't been very vocal at all. So maybe they're stewing and trying to figure out, well, with their federal drug regulators and seeing how they need to sort of move forward, because I think the jig is up, and you know, the two largest medical associations in the country are urging these federal regulators to move marijuana out of the Schedule 1. And I understand that, unfortunately, these bureaucrats have a timeline where they come up with a new drug agenda every year, at the beginning of the year, next year. So maybe at that point we'll see something. And I understand Alan St. Pierre, the director of NORML, is now being invited to the Office of National Drug Control Policy meetings for input, mm-hmm. his input. So it seems like there's a seems like something is in the works.
Yeah, there are there's definitely change in the air, and we want to thank you, Sunil Agarwal, for being a part of that change. I think the work you did with the medical student section was kind of the push that got this all started, so we have a lot of thanks to give to you and your fellow medical students. Thanks for doing the great work there.
Thanks, Russ. It's a pleasure. I'm so excited that you're on the front lines and getting everyone this information so they can have some hope.
All right. Dr. Sunil Agarwal from University of Washington School of Medicine, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Yep. My pleasure. Thanks. Anytime.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins. No, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation, every Saturday night at 6 p.m. Pacific at live.normal.org. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Carnivool is a five-piece alternative rock, progressive rock music group from Perth, Western Australia, formed in 1997 as a high school band which played parties using a set of covers of Nirvana and Carcass with some originals. By 1998, lead singer Ian Kenny changed their set to entirely originals, removing all early members, and the band was named Carnivool, possibly derived from an anecdotal description that the original members were a bunch of clowns around Perth. In 1999, the band released its self-titled EP, Carnivool, and in March 2001, they released a second EP, Persona. At the 2001 West Australian Music Industry Awards, or the WAMI Awards, the band won Best Original Metal Act, with Fade from Persona nominated for Most Popular Local Original Song. Shortly after they won the Western Australia State Final of the National Campus Band Competition, they competed in the National Finals held in Hobart, Tasmania. For more information on the band, check out www.carnivool.com.au or myspace.com/carnivool. That's K-A-R-N-I-V-O-O-L. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Carnivool with Themata. We'll be right back. thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder to check out Normal Show Live this Saturday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, at live.normal.org. Joining us are our guests, indie film actor Hal B. Klein and filmmaker Dal Puspoli from the new movie Fix, a look at American addiction. I want to thank you all for downloading the Daily Audio Stash. I'm, of course, thankful to all of you who helped to make this program possible. All of our great music editor volunteers, our stash editor out in Maryland, as well as all of the guests who join us on a regular basis to help provide content for the Daily Audio Stash. It's all a collaborative work, and I couldn't do it all without you. So thanks so much for helping us get the word out to America and the world. We'll be back on Monday with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.